طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This is your host, John Roberts. Donald Trump's weaponization of foreign aid was further extended against the Palestinian people when he withdrew the United States' contribution to Palestinian relief through UNRWA. The U.S. State Department has announced it would no longer continue its $360 million annual contributions to the United States Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, depriving it of a third of its budget. U.S. officials described the organization as irredeemably flawed. The move follows an announcement last week that Washington had slashed $200 million from other aid programs for the Palestinians. About 5 million Palestinians, many languishing for decades in refugee camps across the Middle East, rely on the agency for essential food, health care, and education. And Israel continues its blitz to further subjugate the Palestinian people with the passage of the nation-state law, which has officially established apartheid as the law of the entire land of Israel from river to sea. This morning we feature Ida Tuman Sleeman, a Palestinian citizen of Israel, who was a current member of the Israeli Knesset, and who was a constant thorn in the flesh of that body. She speaks about the new Israeli nation-state law during her recent speaking tour in the United States. She is frequently criticized for her outspoken opinions by Israeli authorities, as she is now for her attacks on this new nation-state law. Here is Ida Tuman Sleeman speaking to an audience in Minnesota.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you. Thank you for giving me the honor to have my last public speech in the United States here with you. That will be my last public speech. I have other meetings in New York, but they are not so public. I'm happy to be here, and it seems to be not as much happy as leave him the way he is. Actually, I have never thought that all these terrible things that I'm doing are going to bring so much laughter to someone. I owe really a good thank you to U.S. Peace Council, who mainly organized this tour, and for all the other organizations who co-sponsored my tour, which is coming in a very crucial timing for us as Palestinians, as citizens of Israel also. This day was supposed to be from the beginning of, from the morning, was supposed to be the only day that I didn't have real commitments of speaking to people. I wanted only to attend the last day of the Veterans for Peace, but of course things that are happening back home is not leaving us quiet in any way. While I'm here, it seems to be that my tour and my meetings that I'm holding, mainly a meeting that I did with the deputy of the General Secretary of the United Nations for Political Affairs, got some people furious back home. And all over the place, on all the, I discovered that it's in all the newspapers that the ambassador of Israel in the United Nations have claimed that I am giving a bad name for Israel in the world. Although everybody knows that as much as I can be good, I will never compete with them, with this government of giving a bad name for Israel. Because what they are doing is only showing the world the reality that is happening now in Israel. I would like to clarify from the beginning that in the Knesset, I'm representing 20% of the citizens of Israel, the Palestinians who stayed in their homeland, the Palestinians who managed not to be deported, not to be thrown out of their homeland, and managed to grow in numbers and to become 20% of the citizens of Israel. But I'm also representing the Jewish Democratic Forces who are insisting to be partners in the struggle for creating a different situation for the two people in that homeland, mainly to liberate the Palestinian people from the continuous Israeli occupation in the lands of 1967 and to create a situation where inside Israel people are living in a democratic country, in a country, in a state that respects all of its citizens and treat them equally. The situation that did not exist till today. Anybody who knows the reality inside Israel, and I know that most of you are very well aware of the situation of the Palestinian people in the West Bank or in Gaza. And I know that it is capturing the main news here in the United States when the Palestinians are mentioned in the news. But also among the peace movement, I can see here that you are addressing the main issues coming from the occupied territories. I had the honor to be there when Ahdi Tamimi was released 2 weeks ago. We waited for her at 6 o'clock, and the occupation could not really do it in a human way, just releasing her and to make her family, you know, get to meet with her quickly. They had to move us from one checkpoint to another for 3 hours, saying every time that she will be released from this checkpoint, and we had to travel to another checkpoint until she was released eventually. This courageous young woman who all of her crime was that she slapped a soldier who was 5 minutes before that shooted her cousin just in front of her house. And she had to spend 1 year in jail because that move she did in her hand. And in my opinion, when she slapped the occupation, that was more a slap for the whole world to wake up and to see. And to see what is happening. Of course, you know also about the situation in Gaza. And I'm sure you are following after the news coming every Friday because of the return march that started last March and is continuing. And it is treated very brutally by the Israeli army, not taking into consideration in no way that these are civilians who are protesting mainly for life and not to be killed on the borders. But when people get into a situation where they understand that they don't have anything more to lose and their life is almost death, they go out and they demonstrate and they understand that this is the only way to bring their voices to the world. We wish that there were no shooting at those people, and no thousands of Gazans were injured through these demonstrations. More than 173 were killed till now, since March till today. And the world, it seems to be, except the few of us, is going silent about this brutal crime that is continuing. Knowing that you know all of that, I want to take this presentation tonight to a different angle. I want to speak about a new development that happened just 1 month ago on the 19th of July at 5 o'clock in the morning in the Knesset. Usually these hours are not supposed to be legislation hours. These are hours that thieves work in. But anyway, we had to work till 5 o'clock in the morning because the Knesset and Mr. Netanyahu mainly, on a personal level, wanted to promote the law that is called the nation state, a Jewish nation state law. This law is a basic law. It's a basic law, meaning have the same status of a constitution. It's going to be forming with other laws that are existing or to be legislated later as the constitution of Israel, which you all, I don't know if you know or not, Israel till today do not have a constitution. 70 years old and there is no constitution, mainly because one issue that wasn't solved in this basic law, which is the borders. Israel till today do not or don't want to define its borders. This basic law that is supposed to define the state of Israel and to put it on paper and to get it into the laws book, the Israeli laws book, also did not deal with the borders. The basic laws speak about the definition of the state as the state of the Jewish people of all the world. It says what is the flag, it says what is the anthem, it says what are the symbols of the state, but do not mention the borders. Why it is so crucial that such a law should define the borders, and why I'm mentioning this in the context of speaking also about the Palestinian issue in general, the Palestinian cause in general, because the law starts with two words. The law starts with the words, land of Israel. Land of Israel is the homeland of all, the historical homeland of the Jewish people. Meaning, from the beginning, the borders have extended. When you are talking about the land of Israel in the biblical way, or the way it is used in the Zionist discourse, you are talking about the land that exists in between the Mediterranean, the sea, and the river. And I'm saying in the Mediterranean, I'm not going to define which river, because there is a debate also, which river? Is it the Jordanian River, or it is in Iraq? So the minute you are defining a state and you are talking and defining from the beginning the land of Israel, you are extending the borders of Israel. And you are in a huge contradiction with the international resolutions and laws from the first paragraph, because the international law and the international community resolutions say it very clearly that the Palestinian territories occupied in 1967 are occupied territories. They are not part of Israel and they are not supposed to be part of Israel. This mixture in the terminology between land of Israel and state of Israel is meant to confuse from the beginning. But not only to confuse in an innocent way, in my opinion. It is meant to declare a historical, from, of course, from the point of view of those who voted for that law and promoted that law, a historical narrative and a future situation. Declaring this from the beginning, it is erasing the other narrative, the narrative of the Palestinian people who existed in that land and who claim the ownership and that this is our homeland as Palestinians. But also defining the future, because it is leaving the possibility, and you will see it in another article, the possibility of annexing the Palestinian territories occupied in 1967. Yesterday, there was a big ceremony in one of the settlements, and the Minister of Education, Bennett, said in his statement when he spoke to the crowd there, we managed to change the discourse that is existing from a discourse of two states into a discourse of regaining our homeland, meaning the West Bank and Gaza. The same party and the same ministers of that party, which is the Jewish Home, which is known also as representative mainly of the settlement movement in the occupied territories, also say that they want to change the disengagement, of course not of Gaza, as you would think, because usually when we talk about, or when they use the word disengagement, they are talking about Gaza and the plan to withdraw from Gaza. The disengagement of the north of Judea. Disengagement of north of Judea, in that terminology, is the north of the West Bank, where the PNA is existing now, meaning Ramallah, meaning all the villages around Ramallah and all that area. They want to finish the disengagement from there. What does it mean to finish a disengagement? Meaning going back, meaning being engaged, being part of that territory. Another article that is very clear from that law is that the unified Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, meaning including East Jerusalem, which is again by the international law, by the international community, is an occupied territory. Israel had a law that said that Israel is annexing East Jerusalem. Of course, they say liberated East Jerusalem. And now it is in the basic law saying that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Okay, someone else in this country have said before that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel and even moved the embassy. President Trump moved the embassy of the United States from Tel Aviv into Jerusalem in order to create facts on the ground and to say, we are recognizing the so-called unified Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And I have to say that I read 2 days ago that in one of his speeches just 2 days ago, President Trump said we finished the issue of Jerusalem. And now, of course, what's on the agenda? The second issue, the refugee issues. The cuts that are going in the UNRWA, and the fact that they want to withdraw from the recognition of 5 million Palestinian refugees all over the world, saying that only 500,000 are refugees. I have just to remind you that those two issues were one of the four core issues that were still pending in the negotiations to be held among Palestinians and Israelis. So two issues are taken out of the table, while a basic law is also following on that and putting facts in a legal Israeli way by putting the basic law that says that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Why I'm some people would say, okay, this is an internal Israeli issue. Israel can do whatever internally, can decide for itself, and can, you know, legislate whatsoever, because it is an independent, sovereign state. That's true. It is an independent, officially, in my opinion, not totally independent, and acting as a tool sometimes to serve other interests in the region. But even on that level of sovereign state, independent state, the minute you start to mix the external, the occupied territories, with an internal issue, you already declared that it is not an internal issue. The Knesset have declared already that the basic law that defines the state of Israel is not a pure internal issue of Israel. So now all the attacks on me in the newspapers today, that I am calling for an international intervention on an internal issue of Israel, you know what? They are not lying. Yes, we said. We said that, and we are going to continue to say it, and I declared it on the podium in the Knesset through the debate of the law. You are now making this issue as an international issue because you are now trying to define how the Palestinian situation will be solved, and that this law is becoming a colonial law. A colonial law that wants to preserve and continue the occupation of an occupied territory. So the international community has to say something about this. I'm not calling for troops to come to Israel. You know, I'm like you, women against militarization. But for sure, I am calling for a political position by the international community of what is happening and what is going to be established. In my opinion, this law is not only a colonial law, but it is also officially a declaration of the establishment of an apartheid regime in Israel. And when I still remember that in the United Nations, they decided to create a special committee that was supposed to investigate the crimes, but also to investigate what is happening under the apartheid regime in South Africa. And it was dissolved when the apartheid regime in South Africa fell down. So the international community have a say. The Charter of the United Nations, which Israel is a state member of, says very clearly what are the values that the different member states, state members, should stand for. And what we are saying here, that this law stands in contradiction with the values of the international community and with the Charter of the United Nations. And of course, it's not only, it is very important what I have said about the Palestinians under occupation in the West Bank and Gaza. And many people will tell me, so what? You are talking about you, the Palestinian who is living in Israel and who is serving in the Knesset. You know, one of the things that were said by the Speaker of the House today as a reaction to my tour and to the meeting that I had in the United Nations, that he regret very much that members of Knesset are using the Israeli democracy. By the way, who are paid by the state, meaning my salary is coming from the state, as if from their own pockets. You know, I'm paid from the taxes that are paid by my constituency, the people who wanted me to be there, who wanted us to express their position and to represent them. So nobody's doing us any favor. We are paying for ourselves. They said that they are, he regret that I'm using the Israeli democracy in order to speak out. And the chair, my colleague, the chair of the House Committee of the Knesset, has already applied for changes in the regulations to punish the members of the Knesset who go out and speak badly about Israel. So welcome democracy. This is, I mean, this, even saying this is not democratic, but let's say they are so furious, they are so angry, they say things. But the facts on the ground have been 70 years that there is a systematic discrimination of the Palestinian citizens of Israel. You can touch it in all spheres of life. You can see it everywhere. You can see it in the 45 villages that existed before the establishment of the State of Israel, existed before in Nakba, and yet they are not recognized till today by the State of Israel. Have you heard ever about the unrecognized villages? These are villages exist on the ground, but the state do not recognize them. That means not delivering any services. The people pay the taxes, all the taxes, they don't get any kind of services. You know why? Because they want to confiscate the land. Mm-hmm. Because they want to take the land they are sitting on. Claiming that they don't have, you know, papers of ownership over the land. And you know, historically, many of the people have been dealing with the land issues orally without documentations. In Canada, it's a well-known situation with the indigenous people. And by the way, some people don't like it very much, but we are also, by the international definition, we are indigenous people, and we have the right of indigenous people, including the right of self-determination that was denied totally by the State of Israel in this law, saying that the right of self-determination in Israel is only and solely for the Jewish people. So the Jewish people who are sitting in the United States of America and practice their right of self-determination to be citizens of the United States of America have more right of self-determination inside Israel than me, who is sitting there, who is living there, who is struggling every day for a better situation for all of the citizens of Israel. So we are denied this right. This practices and policies of discrimination, and I can give you hundreds of examples. And you just have, you know what, to Google it and you will see. There's a lot written about this issue. The last one of them is the fact that Netanyahu's government and Netanyahu himself is leading an attack over our political rights. And he's trying to delegitimize the political activism and representation of the Palestinian citizens of Israel. It happened in the last cadency of the Knesset when they legislated the law of raising the threshold to the Knesset, which exactly was 2% above the biggest percent reached by the one of the Palestinians' political parties' representation. Meaning exactly they raised the 2% that the four parties cannot be represented in this Knesset. So that's why we got together, the four of us, despite the different ideological backgrounds. In our joint list, which became the third biggest body or faction in the Knesset, we came together communists, Islamists, liberals, and nationalists. The four of the different parties. we had a political agenda agreed upon and a social agenda agreed upon by all of us, and we ran together and we got to a situation where instead of being kicked out of the Knesset, we came back even stronger than before. So now the next step was you saw it in the last election when Netanyahu said on the same day of the election, calling the Jewish majority, mainly the right wing, please come and vote because the Arabs are coming in groves to vote, coming on buses, and you have to rescue the country. That was an act of racism, but it was also a political act to delegitimize the basic right of the Palestinian citizens of Israel and any citizen all over the world is to vote. That's the basic right. And he wanted to delegitimize it, and he continued, of course, all the time, including this attack that is happening today in the newspapers over my political activism. So this law is going to that direction, but the main debate that we had over this law was two major debates. One is that we looked very carefully in the text, and beside the fact that the Palestinians were absentees in that law, 20% of the citizens of Israel were not mentioned at all in that law. We are the absentees. There are two words that are not mentioned in the definition, in the law that define the state of Israel: equality and democracy. You read through all the articles, there is no equality, there is no democracy. And for those who know, there was and still existing a law from 1985 that defined Israel as Jewish and democratic. And it looks like Netanyahu ended the debate about the conflict between having the state as a Jewish state and democratic, and said very clearly, by this law, finish democratic, now we are focusing on Jewish. And this is our main goal. And you can see it in Article 7 of the law, when it says very clearly that developing and building Jewish settlements is a national value. Well, this is the new version of the article. The article before was that the state of Israel have the right to establish settlements for one group of people by the nation, nationality or religious affiliation. It was too blunt. It was too much to present it to the world, because everybody then understood that instead of that, you can just write a big sign in the entrance of any city and say, only for Jews. And you can imagine how the world will look at such a thing. And they understood, but the new version is not less, in my opinion, it's even worse. Because it says very clearly that what was existing till today as a policy, like in the case of Umm al-Hiran, a village in south of Israel, in al-Naqab, it's a village that existed since 1952 when the Israeli army asked the people who are living there to move from the border near Egypt, because there are military action going on, and asked them to move to this place and to establish their village in that place. Now Umm al-Hiran has an order from the government issued by the Supreme Court to be evacuated, the people to be displaced, and to build on those lands a Jewish settlement called Hiran. They took off al-Hiran, so now it's Hiran. This policy that existed And we were fighting against it. And we went to the Supreme Court. And the people, I don't know if you remember, a year ago, they tried to demolish the village, and the people, and one of the people, of the inhabitants of Melhiran was killed. He is by the police, and they called him in half an hour a member of ISIS, and he was trying to commit a suicide against the police. That was the story that went out in half an hour. A teacher who is teaching in the formal educational system of Israel, in half a minute they could discover that he is a member of ISIS. For 38 years they didn't discover that when he was teaching in schools. But immediately there was investigation, we did not, and of course my colleague and the head of our faction was, who was there solidarizing with the people, was shot in his head. MK Ayman Audi was shot in the same evening, and it was good that it wasn't a serious injury except a big wound here. So this policy that we were able to confront by legal methods, by parliamentarian discussions, by organizing the people against it, from now on, it's a legal policy. It's a policy that is integrated in the law. The minute the laws say that it is a national value, the Jewish settlements and developing the Jewish settlements, then confiscation of land, moving people from their land, demolishing Al-Araqib village 130 times in 3 years, is becoming normal. Is becoming the normal situation. So this law is changing reality from the, axioma, you say? The taken for granted value, equality among citizens, that wasn't practiced really, but at least that was the understanding that citizens should be equal. Mm-hmm. From now on, discrimination is the normal situation. And by this law, even there is a possibility in the future to see some right-wing people claiming to the or appealing to the Supreme Court against a policy, an equal policy that is treating all the people of Israel equally, or the citizens of Israel equally. Because discrimination now is very much legalized, and superiority of one group over the other is also understood. You have to understand, this law is affecting the Palestinian people in the occupied territory very clearly. As I mentioned, it's a colonial law. But it is also doing a classification of the people who are living inside Israel. And by these article, by this law, there is one high class from now on, which are the Jewish citizens. After that, there is us, the Palestinian citizens of Israel, who wouldn't be that equal because developing our settlements is not equal. We are not, this is not our historical homeland. This is not our place. We are just by chance there, you know. And there is the third class, which are the residents of Jerusalem, the Jerusalemite people, and the Golan, Syrian Golan Heights under occupation residents. Why I'm saying this? Because if you don't know, Israel unified, annexed East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights, but did not recognize the residents as citizens. Meaning they are residents, And there's a huge attack on the Jerusalemite people. A quiet, what we call a quiet transfer, by taking their documents from them and denying them to come back to Jerusalem if they are away for more than 3 years, even to work outside Jerusalem. And there are more than 10,000 Jerusalemites who lost their identity documents because of that. And the Golan Heights people, they are residents, they are not citizens. It's a new, also new old class that exists in Israeli new reality. So if this is the situation, if this is what the law says, does anybody expect that we lay back and we sit and do not call for any kind of international solidarity with us? Not with us only as Palestinian citizens of Israel, but also for those tens of thousands of Jews who marched with us on the 11th of 8 in the streets of Tel Aviv, because they insist that they want to live in a normal state that is democratic, that is equal, and that is not practicing occupation anymore. So when we are speaking, we are not speaking about ourselves only. We are speaking in the name of all of those who refuse this new reality. This law has been passed with a majority of 62 members out of 120. Can you imagine a constitution that is formalized and legalized in any country with only the consent of 50% of the population? This is even not what the international laws say. One of the conditions is a kind of consent. Usually people have public debates. I also spoke about how I was fascinated about the experience of the South African when they wanted to write their new constitution, how they went from one supermarket to another, from one home to another, and asked people, what would you like to see in the new constitution? Which rights you think you want the constitution to protect? The constitution is supposed to protect and to put the platform for the citizens, not for the state to oppress its own citizens. And this is the situation in this law. It is more for the fanatic, right-wing, racist government who is ruling this country and not for the two people who are living and citizens of that country. The other thing, of course, that as I mentioned, it is against the international law, because I said 62 has agreed, you have to know 55 opposed the law. 55 members of the Knesset opposed and 2 abstained. So this is the huge majority this law got. From the first day, the same moment that this law had passed, even before, in our debates in the different committees and in the General Assembly of the Knesset, we said it very clearly, we are not going to coexist with an apartheid regime legally now, officially now. And we will continue to struggle to abolish this law. The minute it passed, the minute our struggle to abolish this law also started. They were created together, the law and the struggle. And we are going to continue. As I told you, more than 60,000 people marched in Tel Aviv against this law. And we are continuing and we will continue. In the parliament, one of the things that we are thinking to do, you know, this law says that the only official language in Israel is Hebrew. Arabic is not official anymore. So one of the things we are thinking to do when we go back to the Knesset mid of October is to give speeches for a whole month only in Arabic. Yeah. And we have have declared already by the high follow-up committee, which represent all the Palestinians, those who vote to the Knesset and those who do not vote to the Knesset. This is kind of more a popular organization that was created by the different political bodies among our community. We declared the next school year that will start beginning of September in few days as the year of the Arabic language in our schools.
Sure.
We also decided that all of our local authorities will promote bills, local bills and laws in each locality that signs will be only in Arabic in our villages and towns. We are trying to think about different ways to express our rejection to this law. The Israeli government insisted to make it a common struggle of all the Palestinians all over the world. Because the minute you erase a narrative of people, you erase their existence, and you erase their human rights, they have to get together. But I'm telling you, this law is supposed to segregate between Jews and Arabs. Our struggle is going to segregate between the democratic forces from the Palestinians and the Jews, from the fascist right wing forces, whoever they are. It's not going to be only a struggle on a national basis. It's going also to be a struggle for democracy that unites people against the fascists. My only... My last comment is that it's always encouraging. And I'm telling you, I'm going back home full of energy, energized by all the people that I met and the support I got and the solidarity that you shown to me. But we still need you. It doesn't end today. We are in front of a long-term struggle, it looks like. In the last 3 days, I was sitting here hearing the news. There were 3 incidents each day, one incident of attacking Arab young men, injuring them on the basis of being Arabs. 3. Today, it was that 2 young Arab men were stabbed by Jewish young men that they say they don't know them at all. They just came and stabbed them. Yesterday, the settlers injured Ta'ayush, an organization, activists who were trying to protect the Palestinian people who were working in their land near the settlements. They attacked them, they injured them, and the army was there and didn't intervene or protect. Day before, 3 young men, 2 physicians and 1 who is working with them in the hospital were on the beach, swimming, and they young Jewish men came to them and asked them if they are Arabs. And when they said that, yes, we are Arabs, they left them. And they felt something is wrong, so they called the police and told the police that we feel that we are threatened. In few minutes, a group of a lot of Jewish young men came and attacked them in the beach, and all of them were injured and in hospitals now. We are fearing that the incitement that is used every day against the representatives of the Palestinian people in the Knesset, and through us against our constituency, is shifting to a violent actions that can be taken by group of fanatic people who do exist, for my regret. That's why I'm telling you, we need you to echo our voices here. And we know that we share the same values, but we share also the same struggle. Who is sitting here and taking the decisions, and the new administration you got is supporting unlimitedly Netanyahu and his government. And Netanyahu and his government is supporting without limits Mr. Trump. So your struggle is our struggle, and our struggle is yours. Whenever you are more vocal, whenever you are struggling more, you are helping us. And we believe that when we are doing it, we are also helping you. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Ida Tooman Sleeman, a Palestinian representative to the Israeli Knesset. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. And this is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.